Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores. Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
The Daily. Heading over now to the American capital to speak to James Stascoll on his book Special Forces Berlin. Good morning to you, James. How are you?
Good morning to you, or good afternoon, I should say.
It is good afternoon here, yeah. Hope I've got your surname correct there, James.
You got it.
Yeah, I'm just bluffing my way here. before we get onto the book, just tell us, you're in Washington, D.C. There's a lot of stuff going on in America at the moment, not just the COVID-19 coronavirus, but also the protests as well that are happening and the rioting that's happening in cities. It must be pretty scary time to be an American at the moment.
It is, unfortunately. There are flashbacks to 1968 with the virus. Now the frustration in the cities. It's scary, and I really don't know what's going to be happening here. It will be very interesting. I think this November. I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
Yeah, and you're a stone's throw away from the White House, aren't you? So you're not far from where those protests are taking place at the moment, and it's we're watching from a distance, of course, but it's on your doorstep.
Well, it is. I cannot hear the explosions or smell the tear gas, but it's about 6 miles away.
Wow. Let's go to, I was going to say to more peaceful times, but the 20th century was also had its fair share, didn't it? That's for sure. So this is what's called Special Forces Berlin, the clandestine Cold War operations of the U.S. Army's elite from 1956 to 1990. Just the book really focuses on this group of people, initially 40, I think, and then it grows to 100, who are really right on a suicide mission. I hasten to say, it feels like that from the description. Tell us exactly where they are and the context for where they are.
Well, I'm not sure we ever thought of it as a suicide mission. Perhaps we would have had we been a bit more intelligent, but we were in the middle of things. I was there twice for a total of 10 years, but there, as you said, there were about 100 of us. We were stationed in West Berlin as part of the occupying force. The British Army was also there, the French, and then on the other side of the wall were the Russians and the East Germans. Wow. Basically, our job was, in the event of war, to throw a wrench into the Russian advance. As one of the commanders, one of the generals said, it was our job to slow the Russians down because the NATO allies expected probably 90 Warsaw Pact divisions to hit West Germany. So what we were supposed to do is to give advance notice and then try to sabotage what we could do to slow them down. And Berlin was a good location to be in for that mission.
Which years were you there, James?
I was there first from 77 to 81, and then again from 85 to 89, just shortly before the wall came down.
And what was the year that the operation started there?
1956, when the commander in Berlin just realized that he was kind of out there on a limb. The American occupation force in Berlin was 110 miles forward from the main defensive line in West Germany. And so he was kind of looking for an ace in the hole to help him out and decided that he would request for some specialists to come to Berlin. And the specialists that were chosen was basically a company of special forces troops, very similar to the British SAS.
So how does daily life happen there for the guys that are on the ground, considering that, you know, you've got, I mean, we're all concerned about lockdown here in Spain and, you know, it's starting to ease up now, but not being able to leave your house. And so what was it like for you guys?
Well, imagine a small city of about 2.5 million people that is surrounded by a hostile force. It was one of the world's largest prisoner of war. It was a West German city inside of East Germany.
Yeah.
And life went on pretty much like anywhere else in Germany or Europe, except for the fact that it was fairly difficult to go to West Germany. I mean, Berlin was a nice town, and most of us really liked being there, but day-to-day, it was not unlike being anywhere else, with the exception of it was probably the most highly concentrated group of espionage agencies in the entire world. The Americans, the British, the French, the Russians, everybody were there. So it was an interesting place.
And yet, were you able to, if people asked you, you know, what you're doing in Berlin, what would your answer be?
Well, It was a strange circumstance. We were not under deep cover. You know, we were there as American soldiers. Our mission, if anybody asked us, was to support the Berlin Brigade. And most people, you know, just said, well, that sounds pretty boring, and they went away.
Yeah.
So we had a daily duty that looked like something else. But in the event of war, basically, we would go underground. We had documentation that would show us to be either German or Eastern European, depending on your language skills and background. And that was the thing. So you really were living about 2.5 lives. Your military life, which was boring and showed something else. And then you had this identity that would come out of your pocket in time of war. And then we had another sort of identity that we used for training.
Yeah.
And we would go elsewhere to do our training.
Yeah, we're just having slight problems with the Skype here, poor connection, but we'll try and soldier on, if you excuse the pun. I was going to ask you the question. You talked about different languages there. Were you recruited because you had another language? Because I'm looking at your name, thinking that you've got some a different background to maybe most Americans.
Well, not actually different from most Americans.
No,
I mean, if you consider that the country was settled by immigrants from all over. My family name is Czech, but my mother was Greek. And I spoke German and Greek. I still do, actually, along with my very poor English. So my identity was Greek. I altered it.
Wow. And so was that used in the operation? Was that something that was seen as a benefit for you?
It was. I mean, we had people that were Germans. We had people that were Turks. I mean, we had a lot of people that actually joined the American military who came from other places, came from Europe. There was a program in the United States called the Lodge Act that enabled that.
Yeah. Well, we were told in the 1980s, of course, that war could happen at any moment, you know, and there'd be a warning and all this sort of stuff. Were there any times that you can tell us where you thought war was about to start?
Probably the most interesting moment was 1985 when the events in Poland were happening. And being in Berlin, the American military had listening posts that would tell us what was going on. And the Russians threatened to invade Poland or basically move in to help establish order, much as they had in the Czech Republic or Czechoslovakia. And the Poles said, okay, that's fine. And then the Russians said, oh, and by the way, the East Germans are going to come in too.
Wow.
And the Poles came back and said, the Russians are okay. If the East Germans cross the border, it's war. Right. And we heard that about a day after whoever in the Polish government had said that. And that was immediately like, that was probably the closest moment. There were a couple other ones, alerts and things like that, but they went away fairly quick. The Polish crisis was a bit longer.
And I should imagine you are prepared and trained at that moment to get ready to put a plan into action and to do all kinds of things. How quickly were you ready to react to what was going on in the world?
Well, we had our headquarters in West Berlin. We had an office where we would come in every day and then we would leave for training or whatever. We knew that place was probably targeted by the bad guys, by the Russians and the East Germans. So our plan was to get away from that as soon as possible. And that soon as possible was in 6 to 12 hours. So if we had warning that something was going to happen, then we figured we would disappear into the city.
Wow. What was some of the, because the whole plan for having you guys there was to kind of cause havoc behind enemy lines. Are you able to share in the book or tell us even now some of the things that were maybe planned?
Well, the book does go into detail on some of them. I will concentrate on one thing. There was a railway system that came very close to Berlin, and it was the major railway from east to west. And we knew that the Russians would have to use that to move their tanks and troops forward. Yeah. So one of the missions was to send teams outside the city to sabotage those rail lines. And I'm not talking about just blowing up rails. Did we lose you?
No, you're there. Carry on.
Okay. Yeah, I sounded like you lost there for a second. But to sabotage critical infrastructure so that it would take them a while to repair it.
Wow. So it's not just blowing up tracks, but completely take the system down as well.
Bridges, rail yards, et cetera.
Wow. It is clandestine stuff. It's the sort of thing of movies. And I was reading somebody reviewed your book and said that a lot of these stories become myth and legend. And the fact that you've taken time to kind of chart what took place and to write it all down and get it into book format is great, because is there a certain time where you're allowed to now share this kind of stuff? Because obviously, closer to the time, this was top classified information, I should imagine.
Well, actually, it was classified until I wrote the book. I wrote the book because the unit is no longer there, so I figured I was not endangering any secrets, but it was still classified. So I had to request a declassification authority for the book. And after 14 months of review, the military and a few other agencies said, okay, we don't see any real problem with this. Not all the stories that I would have liked to have told are in the book, but quite a few of them are. I'm now endeavoring to actually fictionalize some of the accounts from Berlin, and I'm writing some fiction novels that are based on our experiences.
So were you told, you know, you can't have that story in the book, or do they go into detail, you know, when they're reviewing whether the classified information can go into the book, or they say, we'd rather you didn't mention that?
The I do mention it. Surprisingly, the review did not take a whole lot out of the book.
So
they've decided that those things are pretty much passe now. It has been over 30 years since it all happened. The same thing will happen for the fiction books. I have to submit everything I write that concerns the U.S. military to the Department of Defense to have them review it.
Well, it is fascinating stuff. It really is. And I'm so delighted that you joined us here from Washington, D.C. James Staskill is the author. The book's called Special Forces Berlin, Clandestine Cold War Operations of the U.S. Army's Elite, 1956-1990. And the book is available on our bookshop, which is online, Talk Radio Europe. TRE.radio. TRE.radio is our website, if you want to have a look there. I've been telling the old website for about five. We've had a new website for 5 years. I'm still giving the old website out, James. But anyway, James, thank you for joining me. And we hope and pray for safer and peaceful times in the United States as well for you guys. And we hope everybody is okay. But thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. And we wish you all the best over there, too.
Lovely.
Stay safe and stay well.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.